Hello and welcome to the HTXT AfriCast. I'm your host, Nick Cowan, and joining me in the studio today is Brendan Lotz, because everybody else is either away or injured.
Yes. Yes. Hello, good afternoon.
I say studio, I mean my front room, which, you know, is comfier couches and we can have coffee and smoke in there, but like, if there is a little bit of an echo or you can hear some traffic going past, that would be the reason why.
It should be fine, though. I mean, I haven't heard anything in our pretest, so
we're alone.
Might just be deaf.
Yeah, we're alone today because Lungelo Shezi is flying off to Kenya this afternoon, and Clinton fell off a water slide at a water park and injured his neck.
When did this happen? Yesterday?
Yesterday.
During the public holiday?
During the public holiday. He basically was supposed to go to a thing about artificial intelligence and robotics in Woodmead today.
Yeah.
And he literally can't move his neck, so he can't drive.
And, sorry, Clinton, I'm not laughing. I'm just imagining you.
I'm glad to see you find this so funny.
I'm really not laughing at you, Clinton. Mm. I promise. This isn't like us, Lungelo and myself, revealing that you like One Direction last week.
Yeah, but like...
Oh, we didn't do that. Whoops.
But yeah, poor old Clinton. So...
Shame, man. I hope he gets better soon.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Because if he doesn't, he's fired. Anyway, so today is going to be a bit of a mixed bag, but we are going to start off with a game that has eaten up a lot of your time.
Way too much of my time.
And you're thinking to yourself that while a lot of it was quite fun, that time in some instances could have been better spent.
So, yeah, for anybody that doesn't know, I've been playing Ghost Recon, Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Wildlands.
To give it its full title.
And we're just going to call it Wildlands from here on out now that you know the full title.
Yeah.
Just to give you a bit of a primer about what the story is about, you play an elite ghost, part of the U.S. military,
mm-hmm.
whose job is to clean up situations and get out without anybody knowing that you were
there. So you're Black Ops, basically.
Pretty much. Black Ops, wet work, all those fancy terms.
Off the books.
Off the books, all that sort of stuff. So you take up the role of one of these ghosts. You can have up to a squad of four.
Mm-hmm.
When you play by yourself, you have three AI teammates, and if you're playing with friends, you can have up to three mates with you playing.
Now, is the AI any good, or is it better to play this with actual real people?
It really depends. So right in the beginning of the game, the AI is pretty rubbish. It's a lot better than my impressions from the beta.
Mm-hmm.
Like the AI actually now goes prone when you go prone. They crouch when you crouch. They only start firing when you order them to fire or when you start firing. The AI is a lot better than it was in the beta, but it is still stupid. So like, for instance, the AI will run past an enemy. And sure, the enemy doesn't get alerted by this, but it's still really annoying.
It's kind of breaking the fourth wall, though, doesn't it?
It breaks the immersion just a little bit.
Yeah, it's the ambience. It's like, how am I supposed to take this clandestine mission seriously when one of my AI teammates has just flashed his ass at the enemy?
Yeah, and nothing happens to him.
Yeah.
So you can level up your AI teammates as you go up or as you progress through the game so that they are better, they're more resilient, they aren't as prone to running in front of the enemy.
Better equipped.
Yeah. So there are instances where the AI does get better.
Okay.
But for the most part, it's way, way better to just play with friends.
Okay.
So the reason for that is that...
That way you can yell at a human being, yes, when they make a mess.
Absolutely. So I've been playing a lot of the game with one of my mates who pre-ordered the game and he's been playing it.
Right.
So we did a lot of the missions co-op and... After playing with four AI teammates, I can positively say that playing with one human is just miles better.
Okay.
So the reason for that is because a lot of the game hinges on stealth. So you are...
Well, it is Ghost Recon.
Yeah. So you're trying to infiltrate certain areas, you're trying to extract information from people, and you really don't want to cause a bloodbath, because the moment you cause a bloodbath, everybody puts their guns on auto and you're dead. And then you have to restart the mission all over again. And some of these missions take a really long time. So in that instance, missions taking a long time. Last week, my mate and I were playing a mission that took us 2 hours to complete. because we had to be extremely stealthy. Nobody could see us. The moment you alert one enemy, it's game over. You've got to start again. So there's certain things. Yes, if somebody noticed you, goodbye. Yeah, can you believe it? Nope.
You were able to rate missions, and like loads and loads of players were going, well, we're just basically QA at this particular point. Why should I have to review missions? And you're going, well, you know all those missions that you hate? If you rate them badly, chances are the developers will go, hey, our audience hate these missions, and we'll take them out. And that was the funny thing. For Assassin's Creed Unity, for all of its problems, and Assassin's Creed Syndicate, even though it was slightly bland, those insta-fail because they've spotted you missions were so few and far between. I don't even think there were any in there. And if there were, I certainly can't remember them because they were that few and far between.
Well, this kind of makes sense. I mean, like, for instance, so one of the missions you have to interrogate somebody. And they're in a compound, and right where they are, there's a boat, there's a car, and there's a boat and a helicopter.
Right.
And if you alert them, they get away, and you can't find them.
Right.
So it makes sense. Like, one person spots you, they alert all their friends because they all have radios and they can all communicate with each other. So it's not really one of those things where I'm like, oh, I hate this game because of this sort of mission. It makes sense that missions like that are in place, and they're not all of them are like that.
Mm.
So the main aim of the game is for you to destabilize the Santa Blanca drug cartel.
Yeah.
And to do that, you need to eliminate the head of the cartel, whose name is Al Sueño.
Yeah.
Now, Al Sueño, like any good drug cartel head, has a bunch of people below him that do his bidding.
Yeah.
So you have a head of production, a head of smuggling, a head of influence.
So essentially the setup is the same as Crackdown. You've got one uber boss, and then you've got some under bosses, and it's, well, I don't know. With Crackdown, you could go for any boss you wanted at any given point.
Well, this is sort of the same sort of thing. So you're given four areas.
But you'd have to level up by taking out those under bosses because you'll gain more experience and better equipment.
So initially you start off by taking off the Buchans.
I should play Crackdown again.
So the Buchans are sort of like the underlings. Mm-hmm. Then above them you have the underboss. Then above them you have the head. And the head is the person that you need to take down to get to Al Sueño. But to get to the head of a particular smuggling production, whatever it may be, you have to eliminate all of these Buchans. And they scattered around the map. You don't know who they are to begin with. Like, when you load the game, they give you the first Buchan, and that's it. From there on out, you're on your own.
Okay.
You have to go through Bolivia, discover intel, and from there, you can piece together who's who. Now, what I really like about this is that there are no restrictions. You can go anywhere at any time. There's not like, oh, you haven't unlocked this province yet. Go back and collect X amount of things. But what is interesting is that each level has a sort of rating, like a skull rating.
Yeah.
So one skull is relatively easy and five skulls being really difficult. And that's not to say that there's the enemies are tougher in there. There's just more of them.
Yeah.
And it's easier to alert them, and it's really well done in that aspect.
So essentially they grade you in terms of like, okay, we suggest you take this person out first, but if you're feeling like a particular hard ass, even though you're armed with a pea shooter, you can go for this person if you want.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really well designed. So when you start off, the first couple of provinces that are around you are like 1 to 3 skull levels, like difficulty levels. And then as you progress, as you start exploring more of the map, the areas get tougher and tougher until you get to right to the outside ring of provinces that are extremely, extremely difficult.
That's quite useful because it's like Fallout, for example, that's a big problem that I think has been peppered throughout Fallout games, is that, like, you know, turn right and funneling you through that area that you can probably handle at that level.
Yeah.
But turn left, you're in some giant scorpions, and your bullets just bounce off them, and you get killed.
Like, this it kind of eases you into it. So, like, there are sort of tutorials that pop up, like 3 images that explain the basics, like how to use the drone, how to go prone, how enemies are alerted, that sort of stuff. But for the most part, they really just leave you alone and let you do what it is that you need to do. So, one of the problems that I have with this game, though, is that there's no real sense of progression. So, you do have levels. You do level up as you kill enemies. You get XP. But those levels just feel sort of tacked on. There's no real, like, oh, I leveled up. I get something new now. No, it's not like that. So, your skills and your weapons you unlock by collecting skill points. and completing rebel side missions, which give you medical supplies or medicine. Yeah, it's busy work stuff, really. In fact, it actually reminds me a lot of Assassin's Creed Black Flag by when you're upgrading your ship and you have to collect rum and sugar and wood and all of these things.
But you got a ship up.
Yeah. This is, you are leveling up your character to improve your abilities. So things like it takes less time for you to aim down the sights, or you revive your teammates faster when they go down, or... yeah, your drone can stay in the air for longer, it gets night vision, all these things. But none of those are hinge on what level you are. It's all about finding intel around the province and then picking up skill points, picking up doing these little rebel side missions, and then finding the weapons. Even finding weapons feels like extremely empty, because you find one piece of intel, you say, oh, I want to find all the weapons and weapon parts in this province. And you click it, done. You have the location of all the weapons. Sure, sometimes getting to them is a little bit difficult, but I mean, you know where it is. So it's not the most difficult thing in the world. Another little problem that I have with this game is that, like, it's incredibly huge, and the setting is so beautiful. There are so many, like...
That's a problem?
No, well, I'll explain it a bit. This is to bring it in. So there is so much to see. Like, you can go to Yungus Road or Death Road, which is the most dangerous world in the world. You can go to the Salt Flats. You can fly to the top of mountains and all these things. But there's not much to do aside from the side missions, the rebel side missions, and collecting these collectibles. Once you've done that and you've killed off the Buchans, there's not really much else to do. Like, you aren't there to capture rebel points. Like, you don't capture checkpoints. You don't capture outposts. There are safe houses scattered around the province so that you can easily fast travel to places. But you're not, like, eliminating the cartel piece by piece. You're just taking out the Buchans and the underbosses and eventually El Sueño himself. But I don't feel like there's much playability after this game is done.
All right.
Sure, it's a really long game. Like, I have completed just the bare minimum to get to the final boss.
Right.
I'm about to get to the final boss. And sure, if you want to go back and kill the other Buchans and the other underbosses, I'm sure you can go back and do that. But it just kind of feels like, why would I now that I've killed the main boss?
You see, the thing for me that this game sounds like is that maybe your problem with it is the fact that it's a vast and massive open world. And what you're doing in terms of how you progress through it is very repetitive. I mean, for example, like Fallout, you can play for ages, but you are going to find some of the most amazing, screwed up, weird characters ever in there. Once you've rinsed those missions, sure, it's done. But on the way to doing that, you're going to meet cannibals. You're going to meet, there's one mission in Fallout 4 where someone was trying to tame those crab-like creatures. I can't remember what they're called.
I think they're not called Myrlurks.
Myrlurks. No, you were going to say Myrlurks.
Yeah, I was.
That's because you've been playing too much Hearthstone. But this is the thing. You find screwed-up characters. For me, with Ghost Recon Wildlands, it sounds like, okay, you go here, you do that, you knock that out of the box, move to the next one, do this. I mean, is there anything in the game where you, like a set piece or a... Or a part of the story where you're like, oh wow, that's really interesting.
Well, some of the Buchans have some really interesting stories. Like,
okay.
Or like one of the guys that I'm currently chasing right now, who is the head of smuggling, has a really interesting story. The head of the production of cocaine has a really, really interesting story. So all of these people, like the people that you're chasing, the story's really interesting. Like, these are people that you could pluck out of the video game and put in the real world and their stories would make sense.
Right.
And like, sure, it's great finding that stuff out. But once you found it out, it's kind of like, okay, cool, I've done that. It's done.
It's a game that you rinse, basically.
Yeah, it's a game. It's sort of like Skyrim. You know, you play Skyrim, you finish it. Cool, that was fun. Revisit it in a couple of years' time again. I don't think this is going to be one of those games where people are going to be constantly playing it, like The Division sort of was.
Yeah, well, that's the funny thing is that you said this game kind of made you wish for The Division again.
It did. Like, one of the things that I loved about The Division was that there was always something to do. There's always something to progress towards. And maybe that's a pseudo-MMO style gameplay. I don't know. But I just keep going back to The Division. And I don't feel like this is going to be one of those games where I go back. Maybe in a year's time, I look back and go, oh, well, you know, I'd like to play it again, see if I can do something a bit different this time, all that sort of stuff. There are some really great moments in this game, though. Like, when you're playing with friends and you surrounded an enemy encampment and you're all picking off enemies with sniper rifles, that is great. When you're in the middle of a tense gunfight while you're trying to extract somebody, that can be fun.
Like a draw of the Ghost Recon games, though. I mean, I remember playing the last game, Ghost Recon Future Soldier, which had augmented reality around all of your weapons, and you had like a camouflage, which you know, bent light so at long distances you were invisible. And it was kind of okay. It was kind of fun to play by yourself, but it, you know, that experience was completely blown out of the water if you were playing with a group of friends, because every single kind of movement through the game became this coordinated, right? Yeah. You're here, you're there, I flanked this person here. We have to take all three of these guys out at exactly the same time. Yeah. Otherwise, the alarm's going to get raised and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
You know, you'd all fire at the same time, think, oh, great. And then you'd see a fourth guy running for the alarm, and someone would move very quickly to take him out. But it was like, co-op was really the way to go. And when I first saw Ghost Recon Wildlands, it just kind of looked like a third-person version of Far Cry.
Yeah.
In that, like, you know, you could go loud, go soft. Stealth wasn't really a big issue anymore, yeah. But apparently, obviously it is.
Well, this is, like, you can go in guns blazing, but you must be prepared for people to wipe you out. Mm. That's just a reality you need to come to terms with. Like, you can go in, absolutely, you can go in with an assault rifle, with your suppressor off, and just go mad. But I don't think that that's the way that this game is best played.
Yeah.
Like, the best way to play it is sniper rifle, find a nice perch, and start offing enemies as you can.
Yeah.
And then eventually you're going to miss one shot, and then, oh, maybe if you're better than I am, you won't miss a shot. But usually what happens is you miss a shot, and you alert one enemy, and then the gates of hell open.
Yeah.
But it really is a fun game. I don't know whether it's worth full price at this point. Juncture. I think maybe wait for it to come down a bit in price so you and three of your mates can get it and play it together, because that is how this game is best played, is with mates and doing, as you say, coordinating every move as you progress forward.
Well, at least the online servers are working. I mean,
yes, absolutely, and they're perfectly great.
Which all Ubisoft games can't say, can they?
No.
For Honor,
no, they cannot.
I don't know. I'll give it a whirl. I mean, I've got... It's coming out in a pretty competitive window.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you've got For Honor, you've got Horizon Zero Dawn, like Mass Effect Andromeda as well, which I'm going to get to today. And then, of course, like, leaving aside, like, the greatest game in the world, TM, The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, which I've been playing, and admittedly, it's really, really good.
Yeah.
I was actually sick last week, and it was a great time to test out the Nintendo Switch because I could just play it in bed. It was really good.
That's really awesome. I like the idea of that, being able to play games in bed.
Mm.
Why I like Hearthstone so much.
No, there you go. But yeah. No, so your feelings essentially overall are positive with a few caveats.
Yeah, there's a few nitty things that I don't like, and some things that I feel could have been improved upon, just like once the game is over. But I mean, if you're looking for a great story to play through and be done with it, this is a really good game to test that out on.
All right, well, that's cool.
And then you were at a
I was at a press briefing with press Google briefing last year. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. Okay, so like last week I was at Google for a press conference, because last year around about the same time Google essentially announced that they were going to train 1 million Africans in a year in becoming digitally proficient.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that, like, you know, you're going to be a coder or a hacker by the end of this, but it does mean that, like, you know, there. One of the reasons, okay, we'll give ourselves a plug. One of the reasons that we work on this apps magazine, which goes out to phone shops every single year,
yeah,
is because loads and loads of people buy cell phones and just sit on WhatsApp and Facebook, all right? and lots of them don't realize that in actual fact you can use your cell phone for so many other things. Well, I say cell phone, smartphone. And so Google basically said, well, what we're going to do is we're going to offer a free training course to people on the African continent. The reason being is because they see the growth around here. And, you know, on the one hand, it is very altruistic to offer a free course to upskill people in digital proficiency.
Yeah.
On the other side of the coin, it increases their potential consumer base. If increasing your consumer base involves training people up for skills that they don't have before, well,
I'm all for that.
Especially for free. Yeah. You know. And the thing was that last week they announced that not only had they trained 1 million Africans, they'd shot past their target. They'd trained even more than they thought. And obviously that initiative is continuing. And I got to meet... And the way it works is essentially they contract out... It's a bit more involved than that. But essentially they partner with local companies who then go into the field and work out the best way to train people in very different areas. Now, the thing is, obviously in South Africa and sub-Saharan Africa, there are obviously great big urban conurbations like Durban and Johannesburg and Lagos. But there are also masses of areas which are very, very rural. People have to travel long distances to work.
Mm.
There's very little infrastructure, very little Wi-Fi. And so you say to yourself, well, what the challenge is there? How do you bring this training course in digital skill sets to
these remote areas?
And we were talking to Fact Foundry the other week, and they said that there are loads of challenges to come out to these areas. In actual fact, I don't really want to talk too much about this because we want to get one of the people from the Fact Foundry onto the podcast,
yeah,
so we can talk about it in greater detail.
That'd
there.
Be awesome.
But like one of the main things is, how do you get people to congregate in a certain area, taking time out of their week for a 2 to 4 hour session on digital skills, especially in a region where Wi-Fi coverage is negligible and where people have to, you know, travel great distances to be there.
Yeah,
that's one challenge that they have to look at. Another challenge is the priorities of that region. For example, there are some areas in our country where, like, a child is the head of the household.
Mm-hmm.
Smart devices aren't as prevalent as they are in urban conurbations. I mean, one of the things that this company did was they had a Facebook page where they had engagement with the communities. And we would give away a T-shirt. Huge traction there. People would, like... you know, come along, oh, I want the free T-shirt. They'd give away food vouchers. Huge traction there. We'll give away 2 gigs of data.
Nobody.
Nothing. Because you've seen that meme that's gone around the internet where it's like, you know, at the top it's like, you know, requirements for my salary. The first one is data, then food, then rent.
Yeah.
And that's completely the other way around,
yeah,
in a rural area. So, yeah, there's all these challenges that they've had to overcome. One of the things that they do is that they get people who are actually in that area to train people in that area because they know the communities better, and also because they are able to translate, you know, because Google, the funny thing about Google is like these training courses are in English, right? They're you know, so the local trainers can take the English and basically translate it into the local language, whatever, yeah, the local dialect is. We were talking about this, and it's like, you know, you think about Google. They present courses in Finnish. They can present courses in Danish.
But Corsa is lost on them.
In Belgian. Yeah. Right? Okay. There are 12 million Zulus in this country. That's bigger than the population of all of those countries. Okay. But yet, yeah, you see what I mean?
Yeah, it's just ridiculous.
But the thing is that Google's basically realized that, you know, while, you know, it's great and altruistic and wonderful to say, all right, we are going to train people and upskill people in these areas with our Digital Skills for Africa program, okay? But by the same token, that's a massive untapped market they've got there.
Yeah.
And the cool thing about this is that, you know, Google have been asked. We asked them last week. We were just like, you know, I mean, let's face it, if you upskill these people, eventually you're going to have to put an infrastructure to support it. You know, because you can give people all the tools that
the training that you like, unless you give them the tools and the infrastructure, it's not really not going to really use your product unless you can connect to it. But by doing that, you risk creating a bigger market, a potential market for competitors. And they're like, well, we don't care.
Wow. What? Google said that?
Yeah, they were like, you know, if it results in our competitors being able to do it, fine. But like, you know.
Wow. I'm a little bit shocked by that.
I'm not really, because when you think about it, like, Google are kind of in the at a unique position in that they can create markets for people who are technological competitors, I suppose, but you know, everyone really benefits. You raise the bar. It's not like Google are suddenly going to get cut out of the market by Microsoft or Apple, is it?
Yeah, people are going to suddenly start using Bing tomorrow.
Yeah, well, now that's just mean. That's just mean.
I think I know.
Bing's still around.
Yeah, Bing's still around, of course.
That's even.
Where do you think your Twitter translations come from?
I don't know.
From Bing.
Oh, well, there you go.
Bing does all the translating on Twitter's Twitter's things.
Yeah.
So I think the last thing we're going to talk about today is the Spur debacle that's currently going on in social media.
Spur debacle.
So for those of you that don't know, yesterday...
No, turn off now and do yourselves a favor.
Yeah, and don't find out. I think it was at the weekend.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Was it yesterday on the public holiday?
Or I think the video was published yesterday.
Okay.
But the incident took place on Sunday. Basically, what happened was a white gentleman decided that he was going
to... I think you're using the word gentleman in its...
Yeah, I actually feel... Some white guy...
Some dude.
Not even a dude. I like dudes. Some white guy decided that he was going to accost a lady who was having a birthday party with her kids at Spur because there was some kerfuffle with the children.
I have no idea, dude. All I saw was just swearing and yelling, and then he threatened to hit her.
Well, basically what happened was that the two kids were playing, and one of them was bullying the other one, and then the child, one of the children retaliated, and then the parents had some words. But now, basically, I'm not too worried. Okay, I am worried about the fact that this happened. But what concerns me more is that we still have people in this country, after Penny Sparrow, after all of these other idiots that have come out of the woodwork, that are still... I didn't want to go there, but okay.
Well, colonialism was great, wasn't it? No, it really wasn't. Okay, there's very little difference between colonialism and armed robbery.
But what astounds me is throughout that video, the guy looks like he doesn't realize he's being filmed. And even if he does realize he's being filmed, he's like, he probably thinks, oh, well, this is going to stay on somebody's phone and never make it to the internet. In 2017, when the world has a camera
in their pockets
and a video camera and access to the internet.
Incidentally, that's why George Clooney once came out and said he thinks UFOs are a lot of crap. He said, like, I mean, like, you saw, like, pictures of UFOs all over the place.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, everyone's got a camera. If there were UFOs visiting us, there'd be more stuff on the internet.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, it kind of shocks me that people still think that you can go around and behave like you do behind closed doors in public, and nobody's going to take notice of it.
It's mind-boggling, really.
And I mean, like, one of the things...
I'm aware of it, because I just say to myself, thank God Facebook was invented after I'd left university and after I'd actually gotten into the job market and had to behave in a semi-respectable way, because some of the dumb stuff I did as a kid...
I don't know if I'd still be alive here if Facebook and stuff had been invented when I was a kid.
Yeah, what do you mean, though?
Yeah, like, I get it. Like, some people shouldn't have access to the internet. Some people just shouldn't be allowed out in public, though, because this guy wasn't even on the internet. He was at a Spur in Glen. And what really astounds me is everybody's blaming Spur for this incident.
Why?
Because it took place in their restaurants. And, like, if you've seen the video, the guy isn't the most friendly person. And, like, I wouldn't approach him.
Yeah.
Because he looks like he'd, like, lift his hand and I'd be on the floor, passed out for the next week.
Yeah.
And everybody's giving Spur such grief. Like, oh, your waitress should have done something. Like, I'm sorry. A waiter doesn't get paid enough to take a fist to the face from an angry customer. Like,
manager, maybe. I don't know. But this is the thing. It's like... You know, look, I saw this video, and I,
when I say I was shocked, I'm not shocked that people behave that way. I'm appalled that they behave that way. I mean, and the yelling and screaming and shouting and the shoving of the table was like...
Yeah, the shoving of the table was... wow.
But like, you know... It could have been that a bunch of waiters are standing around going, oh my word, what the heck is happening? But also in the back of their heads going, he'll walk away any second now.
Yeah.
Just walk away and everything will be fine. And, you know, but like, I find it really, really rich that people who usually treat waiters like navel lint are now expecting waiters to step in and throw their bodies between two people in a situation that might turn horribly violent.
Yeah, and I mean, it was getting to a point where it was getting violent. But then what happened today kind of made me reconsider my stance on hating people that do stuff like this.
Oh, no, I know exactly where you're going with this, and I wouldn't reconsider your stance on hating people, but there's hating people, and then there's lowering yourself to their level.
So... a tweet came out this morning which, number one, gave the guy's name, which, okay, I was kind of, I was curious. It was going to come out at any stage, but his name was given out.
Right.
Then they said where he was from.
Right.
And then they gave a location on Twitter where he could be found.
So, and essentially, I hesitate to use the word doxed.
It's a low-level dox.
It's as close to doxing as you can get without actually releasing his home address and his telephone number.
Yeah. So basically, I'm not going to repeat where people can find the tweets. I'm not going to say where he was, where you can find him, because mob mentality is a real thing.
Right.
So kind of brought back the Ashley Madison hack to mind.
Yeah.
When when the Ashley Madison database was hacked and everybody was like, oh, release the names of the cheaters and their credit card information. They must know. And I was kind of like sitting there going, really? You want to risk people's lives and their livelihood so that you can get your sweet taste of vengeance? Like, that doesn't seem to sit with anybody, really. Hmm. And it just kind of, it makes me think, how far is too far?
There's a very, very interesting talk given by a guy called John Ronson. Have you ever heard of him?
No.
John Ronson is a guy who wrote a book called The Psychopath Test, where, you know, and he does a lot about human behavior in the online space. He did a TED talk where he... Do you remember that? I can't remember her name, and it's probably a good thing that I can't remember her name. But there was this woman who got on a plane...
Oh, Justine Savoy.
Oh, right. The I'm going to Africa.
Yeah, hyper-AIDS, yeah.
Right. And, of course, she lands to find out she's trending internationally.
And she was fired as well.
And you're fired, and, you know, her relatives going, I can't believe... We raised you that way.
Yeah,
like friendships of hers have gone to pieces because she tweeted out a very insensitive and very poorly thought out tweet, which she just thought, because people know who she is, was immensely tongue in cheek. Now, I think it was in poor taste and all the rest of it. But John Ronson points out that, you know, all these people on the internet, it became, let's get her.
Yeah.
Get her. All right? And you could argue, okay, even if you wanted to be utterly and completely bullheaded about this, you'd say, well, she deserved it, whatever.
Mm.
But just look at the behavior there, which is like there is something inordinately unheroic about thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people coming down on one individual.
Yeah.
For admittedly a stupid thing.
Yeah.
You know, if you wanted to take it to the worst extreme, like you go, oh, well, you're a horrible racist, blah, blah, blah. But, like, here's the thing. When you are punching down from a position of strength, whether you are on the side of angels or you're in league with the devil, you're still bullying somebody.
Yeah.
And it's like, to watch someone get torn apart like that in a public space, in a digital space, it's very, very hard to kind of keep your zest for justice.
Yeah.
Because when someone's getting, like, absolutely hammered like that, I don't know. I find myself sitting back going, this is getting too ugly, dude. And
yeah.
Surely if you're on the moral high ground, surely you can see that too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I'm not... Here's the thing. There are enough trolls, enough outraged people in the world...
to banjack somebody without several thousand other people getting involved.
Yeah. And I mean, like, we're not advocating for what this guy did saying that he should be protected and all
well,
that
this
stuff.
This is what you said at the beginning, which was like, I can't believe you said that stuff, not knowing that there's someone with a camera in their pocket. I mean,
yeah.
If you want a quicker way to 86 your life for the next week, year, whatever, I don't see a quicker way, because here's the thing. Regardless of how we feel about watching someone get ganged up on, no matter how much they may have deserved it,
yeah,
that guy will be spur racist man for the rest of his life.
Yeah,
because the internet doesn't forget.
No,
you know, in much the same way that that young lady who took the Stephen Colbert joke about Asians completely out of context. Like, Stephen Colbert was basically being incredibly satirical about race relations in America.
Yeah.
But because he's playing that sort of like right-wing character, he's doing a joke in character.
Yeah.
To show the ridiculousness of where race relations are in America. Mm. This young lady took that and tried to get the hashtag cancel Colbert trending worldwide. Right? And, you know, I've read interviews with her like 5 or 6 years later where she's like, yes, I got it wrong. I shouldn't have done that. But now she's known as the Cancel Colbert woman,
yeah,
for the rest of wherever.
I mean, yeah, like, he is going to be the spur racist, angry, chauvinist man for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Like, there's no escaping that.
And what happens to him at work? What happens to him with friends? What happens to him,
I mean, like,
in any social situation? I mean, he's essentially become a celebrity.
Exactly. And his face is now plastered everywhere. It's not like you can go somewhere where you're going to, hopefully he won't be able to go somewhere where somebody's not going to recognize him and go, oh, here's a job for you, you know? Like, it's like a Penny Sparrow. Nobody, I don't know any real estate agency that's going to go, oh, yes, we'll hire Penny Sparrow.
Well, that's the funny thing is, I remember when one of the first comments I saw underneath the video of racist Spurman was, is he an estate agent?
Well, he's not. He does something else.
Well, I mean,
We know that much.
I don't care. Yeah, but I see what your point is. It's, you find yourself kind of between the devil and the deep blue sea on this one, because you're going, this guy typifies a situation. This guy basically has behaved in a way which is unconscionably bad.
Yeah.
Right? But in the days and years and decades before Twitter, that would never have seen the light of day outside that Spur. That would have just been a story that the Spur employees would go, remember that?
Yeah.
Freaking insane dude who was in here the other week.
And it would probably make a headline on some newspaper, and that would be the end of it.
Even if it gets that far. Like, you wonder to yourself, how much egregious, terrible stuff happened in the days before Twitter and YouTube?
I shudder to think, you know? Really.
I'll give you an example. There was a... When I was in England, there was... And I will not mention his name, because, you know, it's not cool to dwell upon and bring to light people's past, I wouldn't say failures, but I'd say difficulties.
Yeah.
Especially when they're doing so well right now.
Yeah.
But this is a guy who's a comedian in the UK. He's been on several panel shows. He's done a couple of Edinburgh Festival things. He's a bookable act. He's a very, very good act. I saw him in his third act, the third time he got on stage. And he got heckled so badly, he ran out of the venue. Okay.
What?
Now, can you imagine... And this basically was in 2002, 2003.
Yeah.
Can you imagine what would have happened to his career if that YouTube clip was still doing the rounds?
Yeah.
Okay? If YouTube had existed and somebody had filmed that.
Yeah.
Okay? And this is a really funny guy. He's a very, 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 very talented motorbike. No. This is a very, very funny guy, very, very talented comedian who could have been banjaxed simply by someone having a camera in their pocket going, aha, let's like laugh at this guy who's dying on stage quite hectically.
So yeah, I think the point is, like, before you start releasing information about people that have done something wrong in your eyes, think about it, right? Because like, you're angry at this person and you want to make it known.
Yeah.
Fair enough. But don't go around and go, okay, this is where you can find the guy, direct an angry mob towards his place of residence or his place of work or entertainment, whatever it might be.
And also remember that the social media is a fickle, fickle, fickle place.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember there was this story about a woman who was at a conference, and she heard two guys making sexist jokes behind her. So she tweeted she tweeted about them making sexist jokes, and both of them got fired, right? But then after that, there was this massive backlash against her going, oh, well, well done. You've ruined these guys' lives and blah, blah, blah. And then she got fired. And so the whole thing kind of went back and forth.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I just not going to do that.
Ultimately, it's like, okay, I understand. I guess my advice in this instance would be for everyone involved, including the man who started this altercation, including, you know, everybody involved, it's like, before you lose your temper, think.
Yeah.
Before you start screaming at somebody in spur, bear in mind this person is a human being.
Yeah.
On the other side of this exchange. And before you start posting people's personal details all over the internet, no matter how much you may think they deserve it, recognize the fact that what you could be doing could have some pretty hectic consequences. And if you are quite all right with those hectic consequences, think about why and think about what that says.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a tricky one.
It is very tricky. Before you dox, think about if it was you on the other side of that, if you had done something stupid and said something stupid, would you want the world to jump down your throat? I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know, there was a series of videos I saw called, what was it? African Warlord Plays Call of Duty. Have you seen this?
Uh-uh.
Okay. So there's this guy who does an impression of an RP African accent. And what he does is he doxes players before he gets into a game with them on Call of Duty. Now, he doesn't release their information at all. He just wants to know who's in the lobby with him.
What?
So when these people start swearing at him and yelling at him, he turns around and uses their real names and says he's coming to their house unless they apologize. And then these people absolutely...
What the hell?
They absolutely freak out. And they're like,
I would freak out as well.
I'm really, really sorry. I'm really, really sorry.
I'm never swearing at anybody in video games ever again.
Yeah, and at the end of his video, he goes, dox, but dox responsibly. Although I'm saying right now, just don't dox.
Just don't dox.
Don't do it.
Just don't do it. I think that is us for this week, though.
Indeed it is.
For the technical difficulties that we've experienced.
Yeah.
Some of these mics are just not working, playing the game with us today. But we've persisted, and we've reached the end of this podcast.
Indeed. Thank you very much for coming round to my house.
No problem. Thank you for having me at your house.
You're very, very welcome. And we'll see you all next week.
Cheerio.
Bye.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.